Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am a Jito Ryo master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you back to the show. This is, of course, episode 42, and on this episode, we will be covering Planet Hulk, an animated movie that came out in 2010, based off the 2007, I want to say, it was 2007-2006, if I'm remembering off the top of my head, series of the same name released by Marvel. Yes, this is an animated movie based off a, you know, what was an arc going through the Incredible Hulk series, and of course was released as a trade paperback. I'll get to the whole Planet Hulk thing in just a second. But yeah, that's what we are covering this week. There are a couple announcements, though, to go over before we get into the review and cast and synopsis and everything proper. As you may have noticed, there's been a lot of time in between episodes. A lot had to do with plans, you know, to bring special guests. Not that it's their fault, because it's not. You know, I did the two-part crossover with, or two reviews that I did. I mean, with Richie Branson, which were wonderful, and I absolutely loved how those turned out. And of course, like I said, September was crazy. October's been just as crazy, and of course, I live in New Jersey, so yeah, I've also, the past couple weeks, been dealing with Sandy. Or as I've jokingly said, Sandy Claus is coming to town for all you Nightmare Before Christmas fans. But anyways, so yeah, I've been dealing with a lot of stuff, and as far as with this podcast, and pretty much most of my podcasts, I've just felt burned out. You know, the combination of work and everything, I felt burned out. Not that I want to give up anything, because I'm not. I am certainly not going to give up podcasting. I love podcasting. The fact of the matter is, I enjoy doing podcasts. I always have. I just need a break. I need a vacation. So this is going to be the last Tom's Prerogative until January. We're going to take, Tom's Prerogative is going to take a break for November and December. I will have a holiday special. Tom's 8 Crazy Nights will be returning in December, or depending on when Hanukkah is. It may be first week of December, actually. But I do have people, I'm recording all through November, people for that stuff. But I still have those plans. But for most of all my podcasts, I'm going to do Comic Book Crazy this month, and I may do Hexcast, but and possibly Tokyo S. So I'm still going to be doing podcasts. It's just not as sporadic. For the most part, I am taking a break to get some things done, to relax, to recharge my batteries, aka play all the video games I bought in the past couple of months, and get a lot of stuff out of my system so I can refocus on doing and putting out, for that matter, the absolute best podcasts I can do. You know, I have the new videos from, like, Anime Next and Wizard World Philly out, and I still have to post the CM Punk video, which I apologize for not posting. Hopefully, it'll be posted soon. But, yeah, just videos didn't go as well as I wanted to. I'm going to have, hopefully, a Lost video maybe released in December featuring different artists from the two conventions I went to. But yeah, like I said, I just need a break. I just need to be able to sit back, relax, watch some stuff, watch some anime without reviewing it. And play video games. I just need to sit back and relax. So, in a very long-winded way, I'm getting at that. Thomas Regulus will be going on hiatus until January. At least the main podcast. But like I said, don't fret. I do have my Christmas special coming out this year. I've got, you know, episode 100 of the Otaku Momentum is coming out. You know, for all those who know the announcement, Shaft Plus is coming. The newly relaunched, revamped Shaft podcast, now known as Shaft Plus. Of course, in Gene's new animes, you know, Mean Gene's anime reviews, Random Red Box Reviews with Chris Stanton. There's so much stuff as part of 132 Productions. And like I said, there'll be a couple of episodes coming out, but for most of my podcasts, this month will be out of the last one. In December, like I said, I'm taking a break. With all of that being said, let's get into our review. Like I said, this is Planet Hulk. Like I said, based off a comic book art that took place, I want to say late 2006, 2000. It took place during the same time as Civil War. Or maybe just before Civil War. I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But basically it was an arc that ran through the Incredible Hulk comic book. Where Hulk had been sent by a group known as the Illuminati in the Marvel Universe, which consists of Iron Man, Professor X, Black Bolt, Mr. Fantastic, a.k.a. Reed Richards, the Submariner, Namor, and I think that's it. Doctor Strange. This group was known as the Illuminati, and they had made the decision that the Hulk was too dangerous to keep on Earth. And so they sent him to what they thought was supposed to be, or what was supposed to be, a peaceful world. The Hulk gets free, trashes the spaceship, redirects it to a different planet, where he eventually takes over. And it is this sort of gladiatorial type of story, which we'll get into when we get into story. But, you know, all this, you know, it eventually leads to something to where all this, his ship explodes to kill the person he falls in love with on the planet. He gets mad. He returns to Earth. And all this stuff that happens during Planet Hulk and the subsequent stories that take place on that planet lead to World War Hulk, which was a summer event that happened the summer after Civil War, which was 2008. And it was basically this big fighty-fight event where Hulk and his forces from the planet Scar come and invade Earth. It's almost that classic sort of Star Wars, you know, you're following Anakin Skywalker and, you know, his friends, and eventually they all become bad guys. When you get to the original trilogy, you know, from the new trilogy, they're good guys. But the original trilogy, they then become bad guys. Yes, as I'm sure everybody knows, Disney now has bought Star Wars, and it is so fun to see geeks lose their goddamn mind. But with all that being said, let's get into cast and synopsis, though I probably don't need to go into synopsis anymore, as what I said is basically it. The Illuminati send Hulk off Earth in a spaceship, because he's too dangerous for Earth. Hulk crashes the ship, redirects it to another planet, where he is captured and put into gladiatory services, and he has to fight for his freedom. So, with cast, we have Rick D. Rosselman as the Hulk, Lisa Ann Bellet as Kyra, Mark Hildreth as the Red King, Liam O'Brien as Hirim, Kevin Michael Richardson as Korag, Samuel Vincent as Meek, Avad Sorak as Eleanor Karif, Michael Kupsa as Lavi Ski, Mark Wooden as Iron Man, and Paul Dobson of the Dobson Clan as Beta Ray Bill. So with that, let's get into our review of Planet Hulk.
That was pretty good, but it's my turn now.
Let's get right into it. Let's talk about music. Now, I unfortunately did not have the Hulk theme on me. Obviously, you probably heard of the opening theme again. But yeah, I wasn't able to get a hold of any of the music for this review. And as we talk about music, let's start with the opening and closing theme. And this was definitely the weakest point of this film was music. And I'll probably go into the overall score as well. I mean, there are individual pieces that are really good. There's a piece called Finale that's really, really good and enjoy. And it is this sort of orchestra, sort of grandness. Or I should say grand orchestra, to reverse those words, which I really should be doing. But yeah, that grandness, it is there. And for the most part, usually, I would love that. You know, most times when I've reviewed stuff that has that sort of orchestra, that grand orchestra to it, you know, like Thundercats and stuff like that, I've always loved it. And I do. And the music is good here, but it's just that the music doesn't work. You know, the opening and closing themes don't have that. They're just missing that it factor to them. They just seem plain. It's mostly, look, I love percussion sort of pieces, but it just doesn't work. You know, with that opening, it's just sort of very low sort of percussion piece, and you're waiting for that big grand moment, but they never hit you with that big grand moment. There's a small bit at the end, but it's too late, and it just doesn't work. And it doesn't completely hurt the story, because the story itself, while being simple and a classic, and yes, something done before, as we'll get to in story, is very good, and the acting is very good, and the animation is very good. Like I said, this is probably the best Marvel animated direct DVD movie that they've done. It could have been bad if all of that wasn't. Because the music wasn't there to complement it. Now, there are pieces that do good complementary. Like I said, Finale and some of the battle music is very, very well done. There's some great pieces of music, you know. The music during the spike attack on the village when they're hiding out is very good as well. But it's just far and few between for the score of the Hulk, Planet Hulk, excuse me. And it just leaves something to be desired, especially that opening and closing theme. I think it could have been so much more, and they went with a very subdued feel for the music in those places, and it just doesn't work. With that, let's move on to animation. And we're going to talk about the overall style of Planet Hulk. And I think, like I said, I do like the animation. It really does capture Carlo Pygan. And I apologize. I do believe it's like an Indonesian name. And I could be completely wrong with that. So I apologize. In fact, if I click his name, I'm sure he'll tell me he's Filipino. So again, I apologize to all Filipinos for completely messing up the name, especially if you've never heard this podcast before. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Thomas Mattis. I ruin every goddamn language. But Carlo Pagualian was the artist of the actual Planet Hulk storyline. And by the way, I have read the trade paperback of this, so I have read the Planet Hulk story, so I do know sort of the differences between the comic book and the movie. And for the most part, the movie is pretty much a direct translation for the most part. But yeah, it really does a good job of capturing Carlos's illustrations and bringing them on form to an animated form. If they just smooth out his sort of designs and stuff just a bit, the actual Planet Hulk was a bit, it was definitely comic booky. It was a bit more grainy. If they actually show his illustrations at the credit scene, and so I think you can definitely see the difference between his actual illustrations and what they have in the movie. But they do a great job of translating that style, I think, overall, from the pages of Planet Hulk to the movie. Moving on to character designs. And again, I do like these different designs. I like that each character did have its place. You know, Hulk being a leader, Krog, almost sort of a version of the Thing. You know, being that he was Rocky and that stuff, that's what he reminded me of. But, you know, I really don't have much to say about it other than I enjoyed that it was a direct translation from the book. And I do like designs. I like Meek most of all. I just love Meek. I love his design. It's very neat. It's very interesting. With the six arms and everything and the sort of small guy and just the fun fact that he's sort of that defensive guy. You know, you always see him, he's doing nothing but using shields. And I like that. Like I said, I love that Krog's a heavy hitter alongside Hulk. As I move up to look at the different character. I do love the almost sort of samurai-istic look of Hirim. I enjoy that very much. Eleanor's okay. But again, it's, for the most part, the red aliens. I really don't have anything. I'm just like struggling to find, like, I went through this before and I just really don't have much to say. I just like the designs and I just can't. For those, I can't put it in, but like Korok, I can put it simply, you know, he reminds me of the Thing. The Hulk just has this sort of very, sort of, almost a, I'm trying to remember the actor's name, and I apologize, but the actor who was in Gladiator, and I'm completely blanking on it, and I know there are people yelling at the goddamn screen, and I apologize. Though I think my favorite sort of protagonist, even though he was only in for a minute, was definitely Betteray Bill. Because he had your real Asgardian thing. I just watched the Avengers, and I'm sorry. Josh Whedon is right. It's always fun just knock an Asgardian around. I don't know why. But watching Beta Ray Bill, again, voiced by Paul Dobson. Again, I'll get into voice actors in a minute. But yeah, watching him get knocked around was just fun. But again, especially considering that's a character probably most people don't know about. Well, hell, I don't think most people knew about Thor until the movie came out. Thor was one of those characters that very few people knew existed in the Marvel Universe. It was Captain America, Spider-Man, and Iron Man, and that was it. Maybe the Fantastic Four and in the X-Men. People didn't know Thor until the movie. But, yeah, I did like his design. As for as the antagonist design, I do love the Red King's design. I love the fact that there's always something seemingly hidden behind his smile. And that's something that they did in the design that I really, really enjoyed. And they had that in the book as well. And I think they did a great job of bringing that over from the book. He always seemed to be hiding something. And as the movie went along, you eventually found out that, you know, his secrets and the things he was hiding. But overall, I really did like all the character designs. Moving on to the fight animation, I thought the fight animation was excellent. It was more than just Hulk smash and Hulk throws punch and destroys everything. It showed the Hulk having to be tactical and actually use his intelligence, which the Hulk does have. I think that's something that people don't realize the Hulk has. His intelligence. Again, this being Planet Hulk, Planet Hulk takes place during a time in the Marvel U history where Bruce Banner, to an extent, does pretty much have control, as you saw in the Avengers of the Hulk. It can actually think and can actually have intelligence in, you know, a fight. It's just that when he goes into mindless rage, he's impossible to stop and can destroy the planet. But when he's calm and transformed, he can actually think. There's an actual point in the Hulk timeline where it's known as Hulk Gray, where his skin color changes to gray, and it's more of an intellectual Hulk, if I'm remembering it right. I'm sure my numerous comic book friends would correct me on that if I'm wrong, which I'm sure I am, because I'm always wrong. But, yeah, so it was great to see the Hulk's intelligence within the fight animation, which, again, I thought was done extremely well. All of the fight pieces were really, really well done. The flow of them was really good. And, again, had that sort of gladiatorial, sort of very hard-pounding brutality to the fights that I absolutely enjoyed. You know, just those... I think it's when the mech warriors come out and you have those insects who get killed. And you know what? I guess it's okay to show these characters being blown and having their heads squished in. As long as it's not red blood. If it's green blood, it's okay. But if it's red blood, apparently it's alright. But yeah, just the brutality that they show in the fights, I thought really, really helped the film. Because it was a brutal storyline, and there are a lot of brutal things going on. Moving on to special effects and backgrounds. Again, this is something I think that separates this Marvel animated movie from the rest. And the fact that the special effects and the backgrounds were really, really well done. The backgrounds were beautiful. There were a lot of great locations in, you know, as they were in the book, brought to the film. And they were really spectacular locations, and they really brought those locations to life. I felt like I was in those locations that were in the book. And the special effects, because there's a lot of dust and rubble and stuff like that, again, also really, really well done. And that helped into the backgrounds themselves, bringing you into those locations. So, definitely, I think they did a wonderful job of translating Carlos Pagulian's art from the book to the movie. And again, like I said before, for all you of Filipino descent, I again apologize for the butchering of your language. But with all that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back from playing a couple of promos, we're going to get into acting and story.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your dear old Uncle Joker. We've got an internet access here in Arkham, so I'm doing a little browsing. Lolcats, lolcats, porn, lolcats. What's this? Bailey's Batman Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast devoted to everything Dark Knight Detective. Well, Michael Bailey, where's Bailey's Joker Podcast, eh? We'll see about that. Harley, get our things. We're going to Georgia.
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here asking you to check out my bi-weekly internet radio show, Bailey's Batman Podcast. Or at least I'm asking you to check it out while you still can, until the Joker shows up on my doorstep. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a hodgepodge type show where I discuss all aspects of the Dark Knight's history. Comics, movies, animation, even trading cards and action figures. Everything Batman related is fair game, and yes, that does include the villains, which includes the Joker, so he won't kill me. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.baileysbatmanpodcast.com. The site also has links to the iTunes page, the RSS feed, my Twitter handle if you're into the social media thing, and the Bailey's Batman Podcast Facebook page. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Connection, which you can find at batmanpodcastconnection.wordpress.com. I really hope that's the UPS guy. Why can't I have Batman in my basement?
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu. The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No! Cannot get your ship out.
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fans.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome back. And let's get into both protagonist and antagonist acting in general. I thought the acting was a wonderful job. This was obviously it was done in L.A., but it was a combination of L.A. actors and hailing from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Ocean Group dub actors of Lisa Ann Bailey, Mark Hildreth, Samuel Vincent, and Paul Dobson. And since I mentioned Canada, excuse me, oh Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love, honor thy son's commands, from far and wide we see thee rise, the true north strong and free. From far and wide, O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. God keep our land glorious and free. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. I'm sorry. It's a legal ramification. I have to sing O Canada every time I mention Canada at least once. So if I mention Canada in a podcast, I have to sing O Canada. I legally abide. Don't ask. All you need to know is that it involves a duck, Vaseline, and the old guy that died who used to do infomercials that I can't remember off the top of my head, so this joke doesn't work. acting was definitely, I think, the actual strength of this movie, because the voice acting was done extremely well. Obviously, Rick D. Rossman did a wonderful job as Hook, and he did great. But I think what really made his character work was Lisa Ann Bailey and Mark Hildreth as Carrera and the Red King. With Carrera, of course, being protagonist and sort of the love interest of the Hulk in the movie, you know, by the end, they're together, obviously, as King and Queen. But Mark Hildreth did a wonderful job of playing this very subdued, very, you know, this king that you knew was hiding something, but you couldn't put it. He had this charm that even though you knew he was bad, you know, you were drawn to him. And Mark Hildreth just has that. Again, Lisa Ann Bailey and Mark Hildreth, if those names sound familiar, well, they've done Stargate. I have to get my science fiction shows here. I'm sure they've probably done Battleship Galactica or Head Guest Spots, but, you know, Stargate, and of course Mark was part of the new V miniseries. But as far as voice acting, I know there's something these two have done that I love them for, that I'm completely stalling for to make it dramatic of what they've done. Oh, that's right. They were Hiro Yui and Relina Peacecraft and Gundam f***ing Wing. I'm sorry, I had to squeal like a little girl. It was a fangasm. And if you want to see more fangasm, I suggest you check out the Straight and Arrow podcast, episode 4, when another Vancouver voice actor makes an appearance. I'm just putting it out there. But anyways, yeah, Mark Hildreth, wonderful job. But Lisa Ann Bailey is one of the greatest female voice actors of our time. I am really of this opinion. She has such command of the screen when her character is on. The voice that she puts in her characters has such command that she demands attention. And it really creates this great female character that is really can match up with the Hulk. The Hulk is this brute that can, you know, really, to an extent, suck everything towards him. And that can be a bad thing. But with career and the attention that Lisa Ann Bailey puts in her voice that allows her character to demand attention, you know, it's able to match what the Hulk is putting out and what Rick D. Wasserman puts out for the Hulk. And it just makes a great duo on screen. And then the other characters, Liam Bryan, Kevin Michael Richardson, which I think everybody knows does a wonderful job as a voice. Samuel Vincent, another Vancouver Dove actor, did a great job as Meek. Advad Sodak and Michael Kupsa, you know, Eleanor and Levin, they all do wonderful jobs. Michael Kupsa's death scene was really, really, I think, well done. Mark Wooden, really only at that beginning, but it was Iron Man, so I felt hell put it in. But and then Paul Dobson as Better A Bill. Again, like I said, I love that scene. That great, you know, Paul Dobson, probably better known as Shishomaru. Not Shishomaru, excuse me, I'm sorry. Naraku and Inuyasha is probably his biggest credit to date. But Paul Dobson of the Dobson clan, which, again, Scott McNeil, who I always gush about. You know, I remember him one time saying he's pretty sure that when the nuclear war happens, it will be the cockroaches and the Dobson clan left. but he did a wonderful job as Better Ray Bill. With that, let's move on to story. And let's talk about the overall plot of the film. And like I said before, this is a story that has been done over and over and over again. It's a classic story of the warrior fighting for his freedom, gaining his freedom, and becoming king. You know, they show this, they don't completely show this, but, you know, Gladiator, as I say that name twice, and I apologize, folks. Like, wait a minute, is that the right movie? Yeah, that's the right movie. My brain works in mysterious ways. But yeah. Gladiator is a perfect example of this. Spartacus, you know, all these classic movies of the sort of slave who has to fight for his freedom, gains his freedom. The people love him so much. You know, the resistance latch on to him. He eventually becomes king. And sort of combine this with sort of the lonely story of the Hulk, who is really this character in the comics who's always just searching for a place to find. He's always searching for peace, to find peace, to find where he belongs, being that he is this sort of creature of rage. And it sort of combines those two stories and allows the Hulk to find that place of peace. I thought the overall plot of the film, which for the most part stays true for the story. I mean, there are things that are changed, but they're little minor things like Carrera. You know, in the actual books, she's a slave taken by the Red King. Here she goes willingly, which I think works better personally for the, you know, sort of the twist of, you know, it's the Red King who released the spikes. But for the most part, that's really the biggest change from the book. For the most part, it stayed the same. You know, them fighting for the freedom, eventually gaining their freedom, going to hideout, the Red King chasing them down, launching the spikes, and surviving the spikes. And I like the fact that the Hulk came up, or at least it's initialized that he's the one who came up with the idea of playing dead. Overall, plot of film, while simple and one done before, is done extremely, extremely well. Because the story, the initial story that it's based off, that really is pretty much taken directly and put it on the screen, was done extremely well, too. All the characters work in their places, and it makes it a fun story to watch. One of my favorite things in this story, though, is character development. And there's a lot of character development, especially for the Hulk, which I really love. You know, again, like I said, everybody looks at the Hulk as just this bruising brute of rage and that he's mindless. And he's not. Bruce Banner's in there. Bruce Banner, in the actual, you know, comics, does have control of the Hulk. It's just when he loses absolute... He still can lose control and go into mindless rage, but he can be the Hulk and still be Bruce Banner and still have an actual thought process and still, you know, intelligent thought. And that's really something I love is shown here. And I love this, really just the showing of the Hulk as this creature who just wants peace. He's had this thing, this horrible thing done to him, and he just wants peace. He doesn't want to fight. He can't stand his own rage. He just wants to be left alone. And yet also collaborating with the fact that he can't. He can't just... He'll never be left alone. And he can't allow that to consume him. And you really see that evolution here in the movie. There's not as much character development for the others... with the exception of probably Meek. Meek probably has the most character development after the Hulk. And I love his development. I love watching him. You know, he starts off really timid as this coward. But as the movie goes along, gains his courage. And is probably the most courageous one among them. You know, sacrificing arms, literally. Literally sacrificing arms to help get them victories. So I like that about it. Last, I think, main story part we'll talk about is fan service in the film, and you can think, what fan service? There weren't any boobies or anything. You're right, there wasn't. That's not the type of fan service we're talking about. We're talking about, within the film, the fan service, some which is taken from the book, that sort of connects it to the Marvel Universe. Doing things like starting off the movie where you have the Illuminati, and for the most part they show Iron Man, but if you look closely, you can see it's Reed Richards, you can see Black Bolt, and you can see Doctor Strange, and I'm sure behind Iron Man was probably Professor X. But, you know, showing them at the beginning, having a fight against Beta Ray Bill, having the fight, Krog doing his flashback, showing him fighting Beta Ray Bill and Thor. A lot of this was sort of, it was connecting the story to the Marvel Universe, rather than having it just be this sort of standalone gladiatorial sci-fi fantasy story, which, like, is, that's the other part of the story I apologize, I forgot to mention, was it was a gladiatorial story, but sort of put more in that sort of Flash Gordon type of sci-fi setting, which, again, is really interesting, and I like. Again, though, been done before. Well, back to the fan service. But yeah, they had these things that connected it, and for the most part, staying true to the story itself was fan service. So a lot of times when they do these direct-to-DVD movies, they'll change a lot to make it work for a movie. But Planet Hulk, for the most part, stayed mostly true to the movie. I mean, to the book. And I like that about it. That in itself is a form of fan service. Last thing we'll talk about, ultimately, this is a bad or good adaptation of a comic book story. Well, or at least of the comic book story, Planet Hulk. And ultimately, it is because, like I said, for the most part, it is a direct adaptation of the book. It really is. Like I said, for with the exception of a few minor things here and there, like I said, the biggest one probably being Carrera going willingly instead of being taken as a slave. So I think the way they did it in the movie works just as well. You know, it's a great adaptation because, again, like I said, that one part and a couple of pieces here and there that are really minor, it is a direct adaptation. And it takes what is really a good, solid story, like I said, that is a sort of sci-fi take on a sort of classic gladiatorial story. It's a fantasy adventure. The voice acting is superb. And like I said, the strength of this movie and really carries this movie. You know, and again, like I said, it's not to say that the plot itself is bad, but the voice acting definitely carries it. It makes up for the slightly above average animation, but the complete lack of a solid musical score, which this movie has. At the end of the day, it's a good movie. It's probably the best that Marvel has done as far as an animated direct-to-movie or direct-to-DVD movie. And I highly suggest watching it. You can find it on Netflix. Overall, I will rate this movie a 3.5 out of 5. Solid story, terrific voice acting, good animation, but that lack of a solid score really leaves a lot of missing holes, I think, for this movie. And it could have brought up the animation, it could have brought up the story itself, but because of that, it left certain places dangling, and that's why I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. So that is my review of Planet Hulk, and I hope all you goes out and just goes out and is a word, but I hope all of you will go out, maybe, you know, me personally, watch it on Netflix if you have Netflix, or any other way, maybe you can find it, legally that is, for free, check it out, and if you like it, I do suggest buying it, especially if you are a comic book fan. But yeah, it's a good solid movie. I do suggest at least checking it out once if you're a comic book fan. With that, remember, if you have any comments you want to leave me about this review, or about anything I've said in this episode, or anything about the network, that the show, Tom's Prerogative, anything you want to do, remember there are numerous ways you can contact us. You can email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and searching for Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the post itself, which you can usually find at the site itself at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, remember to check out everybody else that is part of the 132 Productions site. Of course, also on the Absolution Network is the Otaku Momentum. They just released episode 99, part B. Next episode is the epic episode 100. It is going to be awesome, I am sure. Of course, you have Mean Gene's anime reviews that he's going to be getting back to soon. You have Chris Stanton's random Redbox reviews that you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And of course, my other podcasting sites, which, like I said, for the most part, after maybe some of their November pieces, we've been going on vacation for December. This includes Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and the Comic Book Pitch, which you can find on the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS podcasting site, which basically features the Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast reviewing every movie, or every Godzilla movie, I should say, ever made. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, at all of the sites on the sidebar are our friends. We highly suggest you check them out. They do wonderful stuff. This includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, his Bailey's Batman podcast, and From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Of course, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Snyder's Major Spoilers podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks. You can all find the site on the site along with many others and check their sites out. So that is it for the one, ultimately the final Tom's Prerogative of the year. So until January, My Toonami generation. Stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
Clark Nova, don't sleep on it.